So I'm going to talk today about bananas, and more specifically, software defining system devices with the banana double split driver model. This is work with Hani Jamjoon from IBM, that's my manager, and Hakeem Weatherspoon, who's my advisor from Cornell. Okay, so to a lot of people, cloud pretty much means flexibility, and flexibility comes from decoupling device functionality from the physical devices themselves. So if you think of something like a virtual machine, the CPU and the memory are not too tied to the actual physical CPU and the physical memory that are on the servers. So this means that you can place the VM anywhere. So you can do things like consolidation, you can instantiate it in a different place if you want, you can do migration, you can do placement optimizations, and all of these good things that we have come to talk about in cloud. But the thing is that not all resources are quite as nicely decoupled as the CPUs and the memory. So in particular, devices sometimes are not. So if you think about today how interaction with devices goes, there are dependencies. So I'll just describe the Zen split driver model, okay? So this is the paravirtualized device interaction model. What happens is the guest is running has a driver, and this driver doesn't really know anything about the hardware details of the device. It just knows something like, I am interfacing with some network device. That front-end driver interacts in the control domain, domain zero, with a back-end driver, which somehow talks to a hardware driver and eventually talks to the device itself. So all of the physical device details are kind of managed by the control domain, domain zero. And the guest doesn't really need to worry. So this looks great. It looks very decoupled. So we can take this guest and we can start it on another machine. And as long as we have a back-end driver, the hardware doesn't even have to match. It'll still just work. But the problem with the dependencies is that there are dependencies on hardware. So if you think about the obvious case, this is that the device just isn't there on a new, in a new location. So if you were to take the guest and move it to another piece of another machine, you may not have a GPU or you may not have an FPGA that you had before. Also, there are things like device-related configuration, like, for example, network configuration. So while the front-end driver may be decoupled from the hardware driver, there's still some configuration in the network that might depend on that particular coupling. So something like a VLAN tag that is set for some particular port. So the main problem here is these dependencies sort of limit that flexibility. So all those good things that I listed before are limited by the fact that you have these hardware dependencies. So and this is kind of obvious. If you were to move that VM and one of these dependencies gets broken, then things will no longer work. And more than that, there isn't even an easy place to kind of plug into the hardware driver that you had before. So this back-end and hardware driver combo is some ad hoc mixed together combination of back-end driver and hardware driver. So what we're proposing is to take the split driver model, that's this one, which is only partially decoupled, and split it again to make it more decoupled. So, and that's where the name comes from, banana double split driver model. So basically what we're saying here is let's take that system portion of the device driver interaction model, the split driver, and let's split that again and make a very clean separation between the hardware driver, which we're now calling the CORM, and the back-end driver, which we're calling the spike. Okay, and the important thing is that there's a standard interface between the spike and CORM, a very well-defined interface, and the two things can be connected with wires, and they can be updated and rewired, reconfigured in a kind of software-defined manner. So now if you think about moving that guest, that domain zero, to another machine, you can think that the spike may go with it, and that wire will stretch out, so now it has stretched between multiple physical machines. So that initial kind of limitation on the flexibility sort of goes away.
Okay, so that's kind of the high level of what we're doing. So the rest of the talk, I'm going to give a little bit more detail about the banana double split driver model. Just describe some of our implementation to date, some of our experiments we've done to date, and then finish up with related work. So before I get started, you might be wondering what these weird names are, the Corm and Spike, and I'm not expert in bananas, although I know more about banana plants now after doing this project than I ever did. They have something called the corm, which is this kind of base thing that's underground. It's the root structure of the banana plant. And then they have these flower spikes that come off the corm, and those are what grow into bananas. So if you get confused in the talk, just think of this diagram. Think back to your knowledge of bananas, and we should be okay. So, all right, so to describe what corms are in our system, again, you think about them, they're the underground piece, right? So the corms are attached to the physical device, all right? So the corm wraps the hardware driver. Corms expose one or more endpoints, and these are basically just interfaces into the hardware driver, which look very much like virtual network interface cards. The endpoints on the corm are connected to one or more spikes. And spikes, again, are the part that is the back-end driver. These are connected directly to the front-end drivers in the guest. So there is one spike per guest virtual device. Again, the spikes also expose endpoints. And again, these look like virtual network interfaces. And they are attached to corms. Using these things called wires, which I'll talk about next. And the important thing is that the spikes in the corms do not need to share the physical machine. So, and the reason they don't share the physical machine is because they're connected with wires. And wires are just connections between endpoints. And there can be a number of different ways the wires can be connected. You can think of a network tunnel. You can think of a VPN. You can think of a local bridge, all depending on the environment and the situation where the spikes and corms happen to be located. Each hypervisor contains an endpoint controller. It's sort of in charge of deciding where all the endpoints are connected. So if you think about each hypervisor, it's got some spikes and some corms. They may be connected to each other, or they may be connected to remote corms, remote spikes. It's basically the endpoint controller is the name of the piece of the system that decides or that manages what's connected to what and sets the wire type. So if you have co-located spikes and corms on the same machine, they'll be connected with a local bridge, etc. These endpoints and the management of the endpoints is also integrated with the VM migration mechanism. So when you are to move a guest, the endpoints are updated properly so that the wire is in effect stretched. And really what we're going for here is a very simple interface between these two parts of the back end of the split driver model. So we want to be able to connect and disconnect these things and do that on the fly, and as you move things around, use these primitives. So when we started implementing this, we first decided to focus on the network devices in Zen. And we figured that this was sort of a natural place to start, just because once you have some of this remote spikes and corms connecting to each other, you're going to be doing network things anyway. Our endpoint implementation exposes NetDev and Linux. So these are the endpoint. It really is a virtual network interface, and the way we attach them to the back-end drivers and the outgoing and the actual physical hardware, the outgoing interfaces, is by grafting them together with something we call an endpoint bridge. So if you look at the diagram, now the front end is still talking to a back-end driver unmodified from the normal way that a Zen virtualized network driver would work, except now you have this endpoint which is connected to it via an endpoint bridge. The endpoint implements the wires. When packets come out the other end of the endpoint, this may be on a different machine, that endpoint is also connected via a bridge or a vSwitch to the outgoing interface. Okay, so
we implemented different types of wires. So we bridge them together if they're native, if they're on the same machine. We have an encapsulating wire, which basically adds a VXLAN header to packets. And this is done in a kernel module that we wrote. And then we have a tunneling wire, which uses OpenVPN. The way we configure the wires is through a PROC interface. So again, it's very, very simple in terms of setting. It's a connect-disconnect type thing. We interface with PROC to say where the other end of each endpoint is. And we integrated this with live migration by simply updating the endpoints on the migration complete. Okay, so our goals with our experimentation, really what we wanted to do to start off with was to do kind of the most extreme test we could think of location independence. And so for us, that was cross-cloud live migration, or moving a VM from one cloud to another and try to keep using the same CORM, which is essentially the same physical device. So I'll describe a little bit about that. And also, we have a little bit of preliminary experimentation on the actual wire performance, because the wires are sort of a crucial part of this whole thing. Okay, so to be able to do this cross-cloud live migration, we needed a little bit of a complex setup. So we needed resources from two clouds, preferably that were under different administrative domains, because that's what makes it a little bit more of a difficult test. So we took resources from Amazon EC2. These are 4 times extra large cluster compute instances, and also local resources. And in order to get the control that we needed on Amazon EC2, we used the Zen Blanket, which is some of our prior work, for a nested virtualization. So essentially what we do is we run a Zen system inside a instance, a virtual machine instance in Amazon EC2, and we also ran one back in our local just so we had consistency. For these experiments, we didn't worry about the disk. So when we migrate our VMs, we're just using an NFS server that's in our local environment. For all the measurements, we used NetPerf to compute the throughput and the latency. Okay, so these graphs on this page show the results that we computed from our cross-cloud live migration experiment. So the two VMs were communicating with each other using NetPerf the entire time, just continuous NetPerf traffic. And what happened was we have the two VMs on our local environment. They're both communicating together. We migrate one, we wait a little while, then we migrate the other. And so what you see in these graphs is what happened to the network traffic in the meantime. So you'll see that there's a big drop in performance. That's expected. At that point when the drop in performance was there, that's when one VM was on Amazon, one was on our local instance. The way that they are communicating is that the spike has stretched its wire out. So all of the traffic from the VM that was in Amazon is getting tunneled all the way back to our local environment before it actually gets to the other VM. One of the takeaways here is that it worked. It wasn't really a small feat, I guess, to have this kind of connectivity. Another interesting thing that I think this kind of brings up is what happened at the end of this experiment. So you would expect if we left the CORM where it was that all the traffic would bounce back and all the way back to our local environment and then back to Amazon. And what we see here is that the performance came right back. That's because we played a little trick. We did something that we call CORM switching. So after migrating both VMs, the dependency that they had on the physical network was no longer there because they were now co-located, and they could use a local switch to communicate with each other. So since the dependency was gone, there was no reason not to switch their CORMs to the local the local network, the local quorum. And you know, we see that as an example of where the performance was recovered. So the way to think about this experiment is not that the performance is terrible once you migrate one from the other. Of course it is. You have a lot of distance in between, but it's more like this is, you know, again, this is an extreme case, and there are these concepts that this quorum switching concept can be an optimization that you can then apply once you start moving things around. And so really this is another example of the kind of flexibility that we're going after. Okay, so we did compute some more migration numbers. And again, you know, for the most part, these are preliminary numbers, and you know, we don't have a optimized environment or anything. Unfortunately, a lot of the numbers are a little bit hard to interpret because our experimental setup brings in a lot of overhead. We're using this send blanket layer for the nested virtualization, and that already increases downtime of virtualization or downtime of live migration by 43%. And you know, the flexibility that we're getting for doing this migration is not for free. We are migrating, our migration of the banana endpoints does give a further 30% overhead. But again, you know, the main thing here is that you know, we illustrated the possibilities of stretching and also the opportunities for improving performance. And we completed the cross-cloud live migration with 2.8 seconds of downtime. Okay, so we also did a little bit of brief evaluation on our wire types. So, like I said before, in our implementation we used a kernel module to implement an encapsulating wire, which basically put a VXLAN header on every packet. And we compared this with a bunch of other tunneling mechanisms. Really, what we wanted to prove to ourselves is that we could do some kind of encapsulation with decent performance, because anytime you have you know, these quorums and spikes on different machines, even if they're in the same network, you're going to be doing some kind of encapsulation. So our results showed that, you know, our results were pretty good. We found that we did get a performance improvement by using our kernel module. The other interesting thing that kind of came out of this is that it seemed that using a kernel module was especially important in the nested environment. So again, this is kind of talking more about the experimental setup than the actual thing than the actual banana wires. But the things like context switches are magnified when you're in the nested environment. So just before concluding, I wanted to mention some related work. So if you're familiar with Zen, you're probably familiar with the block tap driver work. And this is really just a different cut point. So when you have a block device driver, the back end driver can be replaced with a block tap driver where you can do anything you like. another piece of work is net channel, which focuses on continuous access to devices. We're really more interested in trying to get a programmable interface between the top halves and the bottom halves, and figuring out what kind of controller can be built out of those, and how to, you know, incorporate things like the quorum switching and things like that in a sort of a central brain for this. There's also been some specialized solutions for things like high performance network cards. So there's a system called Nomad, which focuses on these kind of network cards that sort of, like people were mentioning earlier, that bypass the OS completely. Also some work in USB. And of course, another way to handle network dependencies is through virtual networking. So, and there's been a ton of work in virtual networking with VL2, NetLord, Violin, and others. So just to summarize, so I've described our work on the banana double split driver model. And really the goal here is to decouple the virtual devices from their physical devices. And you know, ultimately we're looking for the mappings between the virtual and the physical devices to be software defined, and those wires to be able to be plugged and unplugged and things like that. So far we've just looked at the network device. We picked a very extreme situation to test it on, demonstrated some cross-cloud live migration. And you know, there's a lot of things to look at in the future. Like I said, we're very interested in seeing how to build a controller that can manage these mappings and what kind of things we can do with that. Also, QORM switching in the scenario that I described, where we found both VMs were on EC2 on the same machine, and we no longer had a network dependency. That's really the only reason the QORM switching worked there. It seems like there is. You know, there may be a way to kind of generalize how to do the QORM switching, or at least for different devices. So that's something that's interesting. And also looking at other devices and other optimizations and things like that. So that's it. If you need something to remember the system by, here's the picture of the banana plant again. So thank you.
Okay, question? Okay.
Hi, it's Jonathan from Boston University. So really very interesting. I just want to ask two things. One, I want to do a clarification, just make sure I can put it in the right headspace, and then a question. So I'm thinking about various things that have been explored, and like, for instance, using 9P at the more higher level to think about, you know, mounting somebody's network stack, or you know, that very Plan 9-like approach where you're going to turn everything into servers, you're going to mount them, and then you're going to have this all the applications written against that. So I think the real distinguishing here is, you know, you're saying, look, we want to make sure that we're not perturbing what's running inside the guest VM effectively. We want it to not know that we're doing this largely.
Yeah, that's right. The guest VM, ultimately, we want it to be completely oblivious to whether or not a device even exists on the physical machine.
So I guess then on the other two pieces of work that I was trying to fit it into my headspace in, one is the sort of things like ATA over Ethernet or iSCSI, mm-hmm. where now you're sort of saying, well, no, why don't we just take it at the bus level? And if we put it at the bus level, well, then, yeah, you get the same sort of advantage. Now, I think the difference here is you're saying you just want to be more general to the various types of devices?
So we want a general framework that works for a lot of different types of devices. And really what we're interested in getting at is not so much whether or not they're accessible and whether or not they're always accessible, mm-hmm. but more what is the right programmable interface to have so that you can move things around and you can get to something that performs well. So you have the flexibility if you need it, but you shouldn't use it unless unless you absolutely have to, right? And so you can make, you know, so if you think of like something like software-defined networking, we wanted something like that where you're kind of programming these things, you're moving the VMs around, or maybe you're moving the wires around and the QORMs, you're switching those, and eventually you get to something that performs well, and then you have the flexibility plus the performance.
Okay, so larger than the transport, might as well, I mean, you could have as well, within your infrastructure as the wire components, you could have run like iSCSI
whatever
you wanted.
The transport can be anything.
Okay, good. So I got that. So then the last thing is what you touched on. You mentioned, so in these worlds where we are moving to a lot more hardware support for virtualization, where largely we are actually going to be doing SRI, steered interrupts and so on, in that world, doesn't that cause a problem because we're effectively cutting out that flexibility point because we're actually putting it directly into the guest VM at that point?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's an interesting issue in general, which is, you know, even if you think about the hypervisor, right, and when the hardware support for that came about, you lose some amount of control if you're just, you know, if you're saying I'm not taking as many interrupts as I used to, you're losing some of that control. So the question is whether or not there can be in some of these device virtualization things, if there are like some kind of flags where you can tell the hardware, hey, every packet of a new flow I want to know about because I want to update my internal structures, something similar to what happens in the CPU and stuff. I think that would be very interesting to look at. In general, yeah, if you need control at the moment, then you lose a lot of that ability. So I think, but I think it's in general, I think it's a very interesting trade-off.
Yeah, I was curious if you had a framework for the taxonomy of devices that need this kind of support. So it seems to me that the requirement to leave something behind on the previous host machine maybe tied to the fact that there's some state on that machine, or the fact that you're trying to get at them. There's some location you have, like an IP address, mm-hmm. or so forth. But other kinds of devices may not need this separation. If it's a compute only stateless device, maybe you don't need to. Is that a correct?
Yeah, sure. So if the device is very well decoupled, then you know your job is done. I don't see that you really want to leave things behind. It's when you have these dependencies that you're trying to get around. That's really what we're focusing on.
Okay. And so are there others? There's state and there's sort of an addressing location kind of.
Yeah. So in the kind of like biggest way we're thinking is like there's either some kind of configuration that has to do with having that particular device, right? And this is like the network configuration case, right? Like the IP address, right? And then there's the other one, which is just the availability of the device. And you know, in terms of an exhaustive list or taxonomy, we haven't really done that. We have been thinking a bit about different ways to kind of or different ways to kind of dig in at what the real dependencies are, because you know on some devices it's almost like you could do something like you moved and then you switch to an emulated version until you need it, and then maybe you switch back and then you start using a real version, right, of the real hardware again. You know, you might have that kind of opportunity for certain devices that may not be as performance centric, right? But in general, in terms of a complete taxonomy and really looking in that, we haven't done that yet.
Jin Ho from IBM Research. So great talk. So I have questions about the extensibility. So for example, do we consider like a virtualization not in Gen? Like we have a container type of virtualization, and this process type of operating the virtualization, all these things, and how the extensible to the different hardwares like the GPUs or these things, or how extensible it is to extend your the abstraction frameworks to like different drivers like storage, all these things. So you have a thought on that, right?
Yeah, so again, we haven't really looked into detail about any other devices other than the network device at this point. Really what we want to do is have something that's general for all of them, mm-hmm. but we haven't done any specific work on them. We feel like there is a way to do it. Mm-hmm. There's going to be performance questions that come up for any device, and those are going to be different depending on the type of device, and also the way the applications expect to use them is going to differ a lot. Okay. We haven't gone down anything other than that.
I see. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.